Hello, I'm back. I'm back in the studio. Anyway, I was here sort of remotely last week. I was gone, but I'm back for the Security Weekly News wrap-up for the week of 27 June 2021. The revenge of the AI beer bots, NIST software definitions, print spooler, LinkedIn leaked out, cybersecurity legislation, and more, along with all the show wrap-ups on this edition of the Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News. With the skills gap increasing, it's more important than ever to train your staff effectively and efficiently. Offensive Security provides training for your organization designed by the same minds behind Kali Linux. Here are two recent offerings from OFSEC. OFSEC Academy gives you the chance to earn industry-leading OSCP certification with dedicated one-on-one mentoring. You can also try Proving Grounds Enterprise, created exclusively by Offensive Security's InfoSec experts for highly realistic simulated networks. Visit securityweekly.com/OFSEC to learn more. For teams looking to inject some security into the DevOps lifecycle, the Uptick Security Analytics platform offers complete security observability for your cloud workloads, including hosts, VMs, containers, and micro VMs. Uptick analyzes builds in development and at runtime for real-time detection of misconfigurations, vulnerabilities, and malicious behavior. Security Weekly listeners can sign up for a free 2-week trial by visiting securityweekly.com/Uptick.
All right. First of all, my special thanks to the amazing Aaron Leyland, who filled in for me when I was away for two Tuesdays. So if you didn't catch Aaron's shows, you should, because they were great. I'm Doug White from Roger Williams University, and welcome to the Security Weekly News Wrap-Up Show. Let's wrap up all the show topics for the week. On Application Security Weekly number 156, Adrian and John had Clint Gibler, the head of security research at R2C, on the show. Clint was on to talk about security defaults and how it actually makes a lot of sense to me, how security defaults were at a much higher ROI than finding vulnerabilities. So, you know, basically that makes sense. And if you stop it before it starts, it's probably a better approach. Modern AppSec teams working with engineering, targeting vulnerability classes, and the latest innovations in lightweight static analysis. So a very deep dive show there. And they had the news on as a second segment. On Business Security Weekly number 222, Jason, Adrian, and Matt had Jim Richburg, the public sector field CISO at Fortinet, on the show. Jim was talking about how 2021 is becoming a catalyst for transition and refocused activities with regard to hybrid models in cyber threats and IT approaches, which I think all of us would certainly agree with that statement. Don't know where that leads, But it definitely was a catalyst and a changing point for a lot of things that we had often told people could not be done. I know I saw companies that had for years said, we can't do this, we can't do that. I saw schools who always said, you can't do online education, doing online education. So a lot of change came out of 2021 for the better, I hope. In the second segment, cybersecurity today requires greater digital and business understanding. 12 skills business continuity managers need to succeed. SOC burnout is real. Yeah, in about 20 minutes. And a whole lot more on their news segment. On Enterprise Security Weekly 232, Adrian, Paul, and Tyler brought on Suha Akus, the application security manager at Invicti Security, to talk about how 96% of DevOps projects fail because of reliance on legacy DevOps processes, which focus on testing for security flaws just before pushing the product into production. Imagine that. I think that's this was basically what we've been saying forever. And it's so hard to get people past this idea of, you know, you build it, you put it all together, you get it ready to roll out, then you go, okay, can you guys test it, make sure it's okay? Anyway, Suha was advocating for DAS tools in every single stage of the process and turning that into DevSecOps. And that's, again, what we've been saying for a long time. So it's good to see Suha talking about that. In the second segment, they had the news. In the third segment, Mario Vuksan, the CEO and co-founder at Reversing Labs, and Rickard Carlson, the co-founder and CEO at Detectify, were on together talking about how rapid response is increasingly needed by threat hunters and that the response is going to have to include analysis, classification, and response to malware very, very quickly, because people want answers, they detect things, they see things, they find things, and they need to know what they do very, very fast. So there's no time to say in 6 to 8 months we'll get it out of the lab. They also talked about the SDLC shortening. And again, I completely agree with system development lifecycle becoming much, much shorter. I mean, not just due to security needs, but just due to product demand. And but they were primarily talking about how it was changing due to security needs and how we really need even shorter, faster processes. You know, those old 1960s models that they used to call the IBM model or the waterfall model that took, you know, sometimes years for people to get things in process are just not cutting it any longer. On Security and Compliance Weekly number 77, Jeff, Josh, Liam, and Scott were talking with Steve Linderman, the Director of Strategic Fraud Prevention at ADP. I don't know if you noticed this, but is Scott's email Slenderman? I mean, that would be kind of cool. Anyway, Scott was going to talk about pandemic-related frauds in the payroll protection program and unemployment insurance. And I had one of those notices. I got a notice from the state of Rhode Island saying that I had applied for unemployment and I need to fill out this form and blah, blah, blah. So the segment is about the controls that were in place and how they were compromised, along with remediations regarding those kind of things that went on so heavily in the last year or so. In a second segment, as you might guess, they continued that discussion. On Security Weekly News number 131, from what I heard, and I did watch it, but I also heard there was nudity, abuse of ducks, and some sort of deviance involving duck sauce or maybe a sauce made from ducks. I'm not. There was something about ducks, but, you know, anyway. Thanks again, Aaron, for filling in for me when I had to be away on Tuesdays. And no, it wasn't because the only time the sex therapist had available was on Tuesday. It wasn't, really. Anyway, if you missed Aaron, go back and check it out. Jason talked about the massive increase in the use of Cobalt Strike by cyber gangs, which has been a big deal because why not use tools that are available instead of building them yourself? On Paul's Security Weekly number 701, am I always on shows that are prime numbers? Maybe not. Coincidence? Maybe so. I don't know. Anyway, up first was Rob Chevelle, the co-founder and CEO at Abeen Delete Me. Rob was going to talk about something that was really interesting. At first I was like, I didn't know where this was going to go. But once we got into that conversation, it was actually awesome. We were talking about the data brokerage industry, and I thought it was about like dark data, but it was actually about the legitimate above water data broker industry that exists and how all these new threats are emerging from the widespread availability of employee and personal data. And it was a really scary segment with a lot of good information that you probably want to go watch. And it immediately made me want to subscribe to Delete Me, which is his company. And I was quite interested in that. So you should definitely check it out. In the second segment, Hasiba Wan, the CEO at Ifani, joined the show to talk about how 80% of SIM swap attacks are successful. And so we talked about SIM swaps and he explained what they are and how his company tries to prevent them from happening. I really thought it was an interesting talk because it primarily focused on social engineering. And despite the fact that all these providers have attempted to put PIN numbers, codes, and other things to keep people from grabbing your SIM, it's still pretty easy to basically talk them into putting the number on a new SIM card. And if that fails, then he was saying, you know, bribery is the next step. And, you know, your whole life is connected to your phone number and you might, you know, he talked some about deleting those numbers away from your backup option on social media and stuff because that's how they get the numbers in the first place. And then we had a nice news segment at the end of that. My favorite threat of the week is going to be, well, you. Yeah, I think we're rapidly evolving into a situation where all of us are our own greatest risk. And we're also a risk to everybody around us. I mean, the SIM swapping thing, too, was like that because it was like, well, you put your phone number in social media as a backup instead of using YubiKeys or some other out-of-band method. And then, you know, somebody gets it, they do a SIM swap, and all of a sudden you're a huge risk to everyone around you. I mean, if you look at all the attack threats that are currently going on, the majority rely on something very simple, your credentials. I mean, there are numerous stories this week that involve credential stuffing. But, you know, getting your ID, your name, your birthday, you know, those stupid Facebook surveys that say, put in your mother's maiden name, your birthday, your pet's name, and your favorite kind of Klingon food, and we will tell you your porn name. Mine was Bort Hudibergast, but yeah, okay, it was fun for a minute. I mean, everyone wants to know what kind of potato they are, but even if you don't enter all your personal info into some silly game, it's still going to get got. I mean, think about it. The OMB hack released all my top secret data from the federal government. I mean, really, top secret. Like, they made such a big deal about how I was getting this top secret clearance, and then they lost the information, literally. And I mean, they send me a letter saying, oh, we're sorry. You know, we told you that you could be put in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and even executed if you, you know, release data. Oh, we lost it. And, you know, there was no consequences. I mean, the form I filled out started off with a list that said, list everyone you have ever known. Literally. I mean, have you ever had your uvula measured? Well, they needed it to ensure I wouldn't go rogue or something and sell everything to the Cardassian Empire. But then they went and lost it. Am I bitter? Yes. Mother's maiden name? Yeah, they got it. They know the diameter of my mother's nostrils. I mean, come on. That was the stuff that was hacked. Add credentials and passwords compromised from your account on shavedpotato.com, the phishing attack that promised to increase the size of your eyelids. And, you know, you logged in because you thought, hey, eyelids could always be bigger. And, you know, and you use the same credentials that you use on launchmynukes.gov. And, well, it's, you know, game over, man. Game over. I mean, we talk about this all the time, right? And the only real solution we seem to have at the moment is to force people to use multi-factor, which they won't, and the companies resist because it costs money and it takes more support and so on. I mean, I've heard that over and over again. And suddenly you just can't do much when Sandra Lutz uses the same email to create accounts on 100 different sites with the password GetLucky69. I mean, and she used that same password as the root password on the mainframe login, with the company name and the email address. We see this all the time, and people keep going for the bait. I mean, maybe your scenario is different, but you're never going to get the free tacos, but you keep falling for the offers of free tacos and giving up your bank account, a picture of your kid, your dog's middle name, and the area space in your left rear molar. And that's why they do it, because it works. It's been working forever. And if you watch Paul Security Weekly last night, there was a conversation about the data brokers who are selling everything there is to know about you from both legitimate and stolen data, because I think they probably buy that stuff as well through, like, you know, sort of data. We were talking about data laundering, you know, so there's dark data that they're not supposed to use. But if they buy that from somebody who claims it's legitimate, who bought it from somebody who claimed it was legitimate, who got it off the dark web, you know, I mean, is it legit? Is it not legit? But they build a profile of you for anyone who wants it, and they sell it. The DMV is doing it. The utility company's doing it. And they take AI and they bolt all this stuff together so that they can figure out exactly what you're doing. In the movie Gattaca, you had to use DNA from a blood test all the time just to get in the building, since pretty much everything else could be faked. Makes sense, but even then, Ethan Hawke was cheating the system by faking the DNA. I mean, he had this little kit that he carried around so he could fake it because he wasn't in the system or something like that. But the tradition was that in our industry, that if you had something that you knew, something that you actually had physically, and something that you were, then you had a secure system, right? So this was, of course, the basis of biometrics and all these kind of things. But we're just really, we aren't really there yet. I mean, the something you know is probably out there, you know, already, and it's associated with your username and password, or your username and your email address and your phone number possibly, and all that stuff is connected together. So in the meantime, you need multi-factor, because Ted Baggin is going to use the same password and username over and over and over again. And even if he doesn't, someone's going to steal the records from the Department of Information Retrieval and find out his great-grandfather's inseam measurement. So I wish I had a good solution to give you here, but I wouldn't, because I would market it with strong AI and ML and, you know, yeah, and sell the whole thing to IBM and retire. But in the meantime, I think I will go and change my passwords again, like right now, but I'll be back. And now the news. So I don't usually report on breach stories anymore because we know they happen, and I was just sort of going on about that. But I did think you might want to let all your people know about the LinkedIn breach. So basically, LinkedIn got scraped for now. They originally said 700 million. Now they're saying 1.2 billion or more records were scraped, probably through an API. They haven't exactly revealed how this was done, but the data is being sold on the dark web. I know. But nothing new here. But Raid Forum had a database that they put together of 88,000 users. This is probably just sort of a proof of life kind of thing. And they shared that yesterday. And it was a subset of people who had changed jobs in the last 90 days. So these are your new hires. And the database contains pretty much all the personal information that's on LinkedIn. So you know, your initial response is like, well, so what? It was out there anyway. But to me, job seekers are the people on LinkedIn who share the most information because they are job seeking, right? And they don't want to miss out on anything. And so they're probably the target of these people who have stolen this data, and they're going to be heavily targeted over the next 6 months to 2 years. Because they're also, you know, they've just changed jobs, so they don't know all the people down at the company. So you might want to issue a notice or something to all your new hires, or maybe everybody in general, about the scams that are going to come out of this, because it's going to be spear phishing central, especially on these new hires, where they've got the information about them that they can put together into viable sounding things. And so you're going to get that. You're going to get, and with this 1.2 billion records, you're going to get a lot of spear phishing anyway. So just saying, you might want to put out a notice or something. The director of the US FBI, Chris Wray, made a statement to the Congress asking people to stop paying ransoms. Basically what he said was, if you pay them, there'll be even more ransomware attacks. Because the more money that the ransomware people make, the more attacks that they want to do. And additional people go, wow, everybody's making a fortune off ransomware except me. So they're going to enter the market, and these $1 million ransoms are going to become $5 million ransoms. And it's eventually going to be this, you know, $1 billion kind of stuff. But he basically said there's an increasingly sophisticated attacks and that ransoms are climbing dramatically. That he went on to indicate that companies and governments who are victims of ransomware should go to the FBI as soon as possible. I agree with the statement, but you should also kind of take this time to evaluate your backup, restore, and restoration processes and ensure that you can recover. Because the problem's going to be, you know, somebody's going to click it, right? I mean, somebody's going to click the link for the free tacos or whatever, and you're going to get hit with a large ransom demand. And because people have been paying it, they're going to ask for even more. Now, I grant you, if you're a Colonial Pipeline or you're, you know, that the minute something like that happens and all the constituents go, oh, no, I'm having to pay more for gas, and the news media grabs hold of it, everybody from the White House to the FBI to the CIA to the NSA, the DOD, the CISA, the DHS, and fill in as many acronyms as you want, they're all going to be calling wanting to help out because it's so high profile. And they may well. And the FBI may jump on this and get your money back, right? Just like they did in Colonial Pipeline. And I would advise you to contact the FBI. But my problem is going to be, if you're Burt's Car Wash, I don't know what kind of service level you're going to get from the FBI. I mean, maybe it's going to be the same, and I'm sure the FBI would say we try to treat everything equally, but I know in the past that when people were calling the FBI with child pornography, they started saying, well, we just can't handle all these cases. So when Burt's Car Wash calls the FBI, I hope they get the same level of service and response that Colonial Pipeline did, but, you know, we'll see. If you love Print Spooler as much as I do, I love Print Spooler. Well, anyway, that old mate has been around the Windows system since, well, it's, you know, I guess forever. I mean, spoolsv.exe is the service that Windows has had running since, I don't know, like maybe even before Windows XP. Did Windows 3.1 have a print spooler in it? I don't remember. But anyway, Microsoft patched a vulnerability in June that initially was just another in a series of low-level bugs that we've all come to know and love in Print Spooler. It wasn't a huge threat, but then all of a sudden, after they patched it, it was released that there was a remote code execution in Print Spooler. And not only was it a remote code execution, it would allow full control of the system. Yow. So ask yourself, where is Print Spooler installed? Is it on my domain controller? Yes. Is it on my Exchange server? Yes. Is it on every single freaking PC on the face of the earth? Yes. So Qiangxing published a screenshot showing the bug, but they didn't have any data or anything on this exploit. But then yesterday, a detailed tech write-up and proof of concept was uploaded to GitHub briefly. The article claims that I posted on the wiki, the article claims that this was likely an accident and that it was taken down shortly thereafter, but it had already been cloned. Now, that author was a different Chinese firm called Sangfor, and they had details they were planning to use in the Tianfu Challenge, which is a hacking contest in China. And the vulnerability is now being named Print Nightmare, and it impacts literally all Windows OS versions, and it may include end-of-life sunsetted versions like XP, NT, you name it. And I know they're end-of-life, and I know they're sunsetted. They're there. Well, Microsoft didn't patch this part. So Microsoft is currently advising you to disable Print Spooler. I said that correctly. And as I said last night on the show, we were talking about this, be sure it's actually disabled. You didn't think you're going to have to write a GPO for this today, right? But yeah, now you are. So be sure it's disabled because it really does like to wake back up. Since we're bashing Microsoft anyway, and by we, I mean me and, you know, the royal we. But Microsoft announced last week that apparently a signed driver was actually a malicious rootkit that communicated with a command and control server in China. The driver is called Netfilter, and it has a legitimate purpose, sort of, in East Asia, is where it was mostly used. The driver was allowing users to spoof their geolocation data so that they could play games. At least that's what they said. I was wondering, are there other reasons people might want to spoof their geolocation data in East Asia? I could think of a few, like, you know, Hong Kong. I don't think we're supposed to say that, but, you know, Hong Kong. So, but ideally it was they could play games regardless of their locale. I mean, a lot of content is blocked in various countries in East Asia and the rest of the world. And, of course, people really, really, really want to get around that so they can play games. Or, you know, you can't watch Netflix in China, or can you? Anyway, the malware in the product is called Retliftin. And I love spelling things backwards. It's always been near and dear to my heart. You know, can you say tour, anyone? But anyway, embedded in the driver, G-Data spotted the malware and shared the results of the dropper and such. And so the submitter of the driver to the WHCP program, which is Microsoft's, you know, review of driver group, was subsequently blocked. And they said they would work. Here's what they said. They said they would work to refine the partner access policies as well as their validation and signing process. Well, I should hope so. We'll see. New legislation in the United States would require the NTIA, that's the National Telecommunication and Information Administration, to establish a cybersecurity literacy campaign for U.S. citizens to try and increase their knowledge of risks and threats. The bipartisan legislation asks that Americans be instructed on how to identify phishing emails, fake websites, because we're so good at training people at that already, default passwords, multi-factor authentication, device threats, permissions on mobile devices, etc., and provide federal resources that can assist with these things. Considering we still can't convince people that the lane ending, like, you know, please merge lane ending sign doesn't mean that you should get in that lane immediately and try to stay there as long as possible, I don't know how effective it will be, but it is better than just say no to malware on the billboard outside Billings, Montana. Bug bounties at GitHub have now passed the 1.5 million mark since the program began in 2016, and over half a million U.S. dollars was paid out in 2020 alone. I guess everybody was stuck at home, so time to squash bugs and get paid. That was for 203 vulnerabilities, so I think this is a really good approach. Crowdsourcing security has never been my favorite idea. It really hasn't. But, you know, and not all bounty hunters are going to report what they find. And it would be far better if you just did this before release. See some of the shows, the segments from this week. But we all know it's not going to happen, right? And so in lieu of better development processes, I think bug bounties are a great approach to get people to tell you what they found. It gives them an incentive, right? And you can sell it on the dark web, or you could get paid for turning it into GitHub. Back in May, U.S. President Joe Biden issued an executive order in response to SolarWinds and Colonial, which requires U.S. government agencies and contractors to develop better cybersecurity. This includes a so-called SBOM, the Software Bill of Materials, which will mean critical software would have to have that list of ingredients, which ought to be quite interesting. NIST was ordered in that same executive order to develop a definition of what software would be affected by this requirement, and they gave him 45 days to do it. You remember we talked about this executive order when it came out and how Biden kind of was like going, and you got to do this in 30 days or else. And so they have now released their definition. The definition indicated that if, it contains at least one of the following attributes. I'm sorry, the colon should go there. It qualifies as critical software and as such is subject to all these requirements. It's if and only if it's, or any one of these has to, if any one of these is qualified, designed to run with elevated privilege or managed privileges, has direct or privileged access to networking or computing resources, designed to control access to data or operational technology, performs a function critical to trust, operates outside of normal trust boundaries with privileged access. So basically most everything except the most basic stuff. The definition will obviously have a profound impact on providers of everything from operating systems to desktop calculators who want to do business with the federal government. So that's going to be big. The NSA and CISA issued an alert about GRU running brute force attacks on U.S. and global organizations that started in the mid-2019. GRU, if you don't know, is the Russian Military Intelligence Agency, and the campaign is being run by the 85th Maine Special Service Center, or Fancy Bear, and there's other names associated with them as well. The 85ths are basically just using the tried and true method of brute forcing weak passwords. The difference in this and tradition, and I guess why it's newsworthy, they're modernizing, and they're using Kubernetes clusters so they can perform all the attacks at a modern scale so that they can, you know, I mean, they so they can create just endless Kubernetes or endless containers inside these Kubernetes clusters to attack you. The main targets are apparently Office 365 cloud service tools, and if they, you know, if you can get those credentials, obviously they can be used to get into the network and to escalate attacks. And finally, Heineken has created an autonomous beer cooler that has a quote charming AI personality, and it follows you around. So it would follow you around your home or in your yard, or, you know, just in case you just suddenly need to shotgun a beer. So, you know, I guess, and you can't be troubled to walk back to the stationary cooler. It basically follows you around. And initially I was really, you know, contemptuous of this whole thing, because I was like, really? You need an autonomous beer cooler to follow you around your backyard? But I guess the idea is that if you're headed to the beach or the lake and you're already carrying all that stuff, I mean, I always see people doing that because I don't go to the beach or the lake, but I see people going to the beach or lake and they're carrying the beer cooler, right? So they have to go to the car and get it and lug it down to wherever they're putting up their like umbrellas on the beach. But instead, this thing will follow you along like a loyal and trusted pet with all your beer inside or whatever you wanted to put in there. I guess you could put other stuff besides. It's just an ice chest. But it costs $3,250. So you will not, you will need to not make an extra trip for that old-fashioned manual cooler pretty bad to pay that much. I'm guessing these things will probably be leading the AI rebellion of 2022 we're expecting that starts with Skynet. And that's a news wrap-up for the week of 27 June 2021 in the declining time of plague. Happy U.S. Independence Day if you celebrate such things. A holiday dedicated to drinking and explosives. What could go wrong? Anyway, have fun out there and try to keep all your fingers clean.